Good morning. Class is in session. Dr. Keith Strudler here, coming to you live from the Marist College Center for Sports Communication on the beautiful Marist College campus on a cold, frigid Saturday morning. It's like 4 degrees out, freezing out. It's absolutely awful. It was pretty warm a few days ago, and now it's just awfully cold. And so I had to deal with that getting here. There's no snow, which is good. Apparently there's going to be snow other parts of this region, slightly outside of our listening audience. Of course, you can hear the show on ESPN 1220, 97.3 in Poughkeepsie. Or if you're not in our, you know, distinct listening area, which is quite sizable, by the way. I mean, it's not small. This is not an No, this is not an insignificant broadcast. I don't want you to get the impression that this is anything less than a major operation. But you can also audio stream. Go to foxradio.net, find the show, audio stream. Or, in addition, as a supplement to the broadcast itself, go online, check us out, go to our Twitter or Facebook feed, and you'll see the live stream. You can watch the whole thing, watch it like a TV show. You can put it up on your Apple TV, and you can watch the whole thing and make a morning of it, and it's 10 a.m. to noon, and then get on with your day because you got the NFL playoffs, but you're not doing anything until noon. Nothing happens on
In the first NFL playoff game doesn't really count.
That's true. It's Oakland and Houston.
It's Osweiler versus Connor Cook.
It's an exhibition.
Yeah.
Who do that? The winner of that game probably plays the Patriots.
Do they? I think so.
The way they stack these, it's a lottery. But regardless, they're going to lose anyway. Whoever wins that game, they're just extending the inevitable. So no one cares about that game. No one cares. But even if you are, that's fine. Just sit here, watch us. We'll get you ready for the game. You'll know everything you need to know about that game by noon. So you just hang out here, watch us, hear us. As you notice, I feel really lonely today because Jeff Brault, co-host Gonzo, not here this morning. I believe he's in I don't know where he is, actually. He's calling a women's basketball game, I assume this evening, not dedicated enough to make it here this morning for the show. So now I'm here, but because it's break and a good number of our students are gone, including one who was down at the national championship game down in Tampa.
How jealous of her are you?
I'm kind of jealous because I know Tampa pretty well, and I would have been received with open arms by my people down there.
And she's schmoozing with the college football playoff execs.
No, she was living my life.
You're not.
Nope. She absolutely was hanging out with executives. She sent me pictures from like the Bucks locker room.
They're probably all best friends now.
That's fine.
Maybe she's going to the game, sitting in the private suite.
That's where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
I could still fly down Monday morning, get there just in time. Maybe I'll do it.
Sitting right next to Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, well, look, that's that was a hypothetical.
Yeah, you know what? How was that birthday party?
Birthday party's gonna be great. Tomorrow's Elliot's 7th birthday party. It's gonna be amazing. We're doing it at a bowling alley, which is kind of the king of all
7-year-old birthday parties.
Oh, it's bowling alleys. That's the place to do it, especially these new kind of high tech ones with arcades and everything. It's gonna be awesome. So I'm all jazzed up about that. I got my outfit picked out.
Do you really think about your outfits for these kind of events?
Absolutely. Don't kid yourself. 100%. Why would I not want to look my best when I'm surrounded by, you know, other parents?
I didn't think you had the capacity to think of anything other than your outfit for the Hannah Storm event.
Nope. Oh, no. That's where I put most of my energy. And of course, for those of you that don't know, the Center for Sports Communication will be giving its second Lifetime Excellence in Sports Communication Award to Hannah Storm. And there'll be some big announcements coming out soon about that on April 20th in New York City in the Edison Ballroom. So, and feel free to contact our advancement office if you'd like to sponsor that. It's going to be an amazing night. And yes, I am actually working on my outfit for that. So yeah. I go through
and
different.
That'll probably be the biggest announcement that you make.
Yes, that's going to be the most prominent announcement of that evening. But it's also important that I kind of build up to that. And so there are these small steps. It's kind of like, look, I understand that Alabama and Clemson care about the championship game. That didn't mean Alabama didn't care about beating LSU as well. These are all stepping stones to that penultimate, to that ultimate moment. So the birthday, so I got some I got some new skinny jeans.
Oh, God. How many rips do they have in them?
There's no rips. There's no rips in these jeans. By the way, welcome to your weekly Smart Look at Sports. And I'll get back to why Jeff's, you know, the fact that I'm completely naked here because there's no one to remind. It really feels like I'm...
Bad visual.
Well, it feels like this is
I'm glad we have the live stream to... By the way, to prove that you're not completely new.
Joined, of course, by interns Michael Wallace and Matt. I'll never pronounce his
last
name.
Let's just call him Matt Krzyzewski.
It's fine.
It's a theme.
Coach, yeah. Matt Krzyzewski and Doug are running the boards there in the other room. But who have come here on their break. And let's not underscore that. They're here on their winter break, to do yeoman's work, to make sure that you have the live stream that you so deserve. So this doesn't happen without their hard work and effort, and I will try to repay them by
with Final Four tickets.
It's possible. You never know. Look, we are going to the Final Four, and you know we'll see how many we can get on that bus.
That's a bus.
It might be a bus. Bus to Arizona.
Oh, that's, boy.
Wait, really?
But no, I don't think that's good. I don't think that. Well, that would be fun.
That would be crazy.
That would be fun.
You. The thing is, we would be on a bus. You would be on a plane. You wouldn't be on that bus.
Well, no, we'd be on that bus, and the bus would be running consistently late because I'd be like, hey, I'll be back in 20 minutes, and then 4 hours later, I'd
I don't think you could do a cross-country bus.
No,
you wouldn't be able to sit through it.
Be tough. So I bought some. So this is the time of the year where there's lots of great sales.
Right. So skinny jeans.
So a lot of great sales, and I ordered some jeans, and they are legitimate European skinny jeans, and I put them on, and I thought my wife was going to say no way. And she's like, no, I think you can get away with those. So I'm all in. So I got some legitimate dark skinny jeans. They are hot.
Why didn't you wear them today? You know I love talk about your
pants.
No,
because I'm saving them for tomorrow. I'm saving them for the... I want a date. And these new jeans, I think
they're
going
to... Here's the thing about jeans. You can wear them multiple times.
I understand that, but I think they're going to rub off blue because they're brand new. I need to wash them and get the blue out. So that's my deal. So I'm all excited. So tomorrow I think I'm going to go because I want to do like a, hipster casual tomorrow, because you know you want to look like well put together.
That screams, I live in Beacon.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know I'm kind of cool. I'm hip. I eat organic. I you know that kind of stuff.
That's which you don't.
But that's the vibe I'm going.
You eat vegetarian, but you don't eat well.
But I want to give that whole ethos that I'm really cool. I listen to indie music. You know I that kind of stuff. Like, so that's where I want to go. And I think I have an outfit that speaks to that. I'm working on it. It's going to be a lot of dark blues. I'll try to make sure my hair is just kind of well put together, but ever so slightly distressed.
Oh, like a little perfectly imperfect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going for tomorrow.
Yeah, you're
and
trying
I think,
way too hard.
And the bowling shoes will add to that. You know, bowling shoes are kind of, they are hipster. Like, bowling shoes are cool. And so I think if I put this all together right, I'm going to send out the right vibe to my people, to all the people, to all the 7-year-olds.
You're the kind of person that would own their own bowling shoes. Do you?
I thought about it. So I actually was.
Like as a fashion statement, just for bowling.
No, I used to have my own bowling ball as well. I had a bowling ball.
I believe that.
I had a bowling ball and bowling shoes. I'm thinking about getting back in that game now. Again, as I've said many times, I have to get the smallest bowling ball they make. So I have to buy a 10. And the last time I tried to buy a 10, they refused to sell one to me.
What's the heaviest weight that you think you could lift off the ground?
Oh, mean like in like a fire? If I was like saving people?
No. No adrenaline, just like...
Like a bowling ball.
Yeah, like a bowling ball. Or a free weight at
like
a gym.
Like a deadlift?
Yeah.
Like I'm in like a fire academy. And they're
Matt, do you think we could break 20 pounds?
I like to think so.
Interesting. So I don't think 30? I could do... I think I could probably do... I could do 50 pounds.
Really?
That's tough.
You couldn't get any reps, but I think you would be able to get it off the ground.
Yes.
Maybe.
I don't think I could. Look, if you're over 50 pounds and you're in a burning building, you're on your own. I can't help you. Interesting, though, was we were talking about before the show. Speaking of sports accomplishments, you know, things that are challenging, there's a 105-year-old guy who just set a cycling record for an hour. What's this guy's name?
Robert Marchand.
Robert Marchand. Is he American or French?
French.
French. He rode in a velodrome. He rode close to 15 miles, like 14 point something.
Yeah, 14 miles.
In an hour.
Yeah.
So this guy, now, I understand that's not blazing. I understand the professional cyclists are doing over 30. But this dude is, first of all, congratulations, 105.
And not to take anything away from it, like, everybody's saying, oh, world record, world record. It's a world record for those aged over 100.
Yes, we understand.
Which, how many qualifiers are there?
I don't think it's in good taste to start taking shots at this guy's record. He's 100.
How many people was he up against?
He's 105.
The 100 plus category.
Once you make 105, you're already a winner.
Yeah, but, I mean, here's the qualifiers: is how many people are over 100? How many of those people can get up on a bike?
I don't think people can ride. I don't think you could sit on that bike for an hour. That's my thing. So this would be an amazing race. Each one of the interns against this guy in a bike race,
and we'd all lose.
I'd watch.
Yeah, not to.
I would pay for that in a heartbeat.
Like, it sounds like I'm trying to detract from this guy, but he'd beat me.
I would do a fundraiser for that right now.
Let's bring him to Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, bring him to Poughkeepsie.
Let's do it.
Lifetime Excellence Award, Robert Marchand.
Well, why don't we do the Merritt College Center for Sports Communication Athletic Excellence Award, and we just give it to guys that do crazy,
have them compete against the interns.
You got to earn the medal, and so you earn it, and so we sell. It's a great. Instead of doing it like at a ballroom, we do it in like a gym, and so we set up We set up two life cycles, and we let you two go for an hour. Well, that's good. That is high drama.
Have Jeff Brawl do play-by-play.
Do play-by-play of these two guys riding a life cycle.
Iron Eagle do play-by-play.
That's true. If we can get Iron Eagle to do it.
I want Jeff Brawl in this race.
Well, Jeff couldn't sit on anything other than
I know.
Lazy
that's
boy.
That's why I want him in this race.
What's interesting, one of our students, and this is a true story, Iron Eagle, of course, was a speaker here, and we have a major speaker announcement. I think I've made it on the show. On February 6th, Monday at 5 p.m., day after the Super Bowl, the legendary sports broadcaster James Brown will be speaking with me on stage. And we're not – the room is being finalized. It's either going to be the Nelly Galletti Theater or McCann.
That's post-Super Bowl?
Yeah, the day after the Super Bowl. We might have to blow it up and do it in McCann. So the public is invited. It's going to be amazing. It's again James Brown, who is as big as they come, not size-wise, of course.
It's probably – yeah.
He's actually trimmed down. He's lost some weight.
Yeah, I'm sure.
No, he really, literally has.
That's probably the best day that you could have gotten him.
Well, what I wanted, this is what I tried to do. I tried to get him to come up a day early so we could have a Super Bowl party. And then I think he would have done it just like we almost got Bobby Valentine to come watch the World Series with us. And that's a true story. But we were close to this. He's actually in Houston for the game because he has a lot of sponsor responsibilities.
Yeah, I don't think you could hang with the James Brown Super Bowl party. You and your cauliflower wings.
Oh no! I think he eats healthy. He's taking really good care of him. Taking really good care of himself.
How was the Beacon New Year's Eve party?
Yeah, I mean,
did you get to watch any of the college football playoff? Not that either game was.
The good news is, so I watched the first one at home when that was a snooze fest. Mm-hmm. That was an awful. I mean, look. We love the college football playoff people, and we love them. And Anna's been down there with Brian Berger from the Sports PR Summit, our partner, helping them with their show. And we're gonna bring some people next year to the game when it's up in Atlanta or down in Atlanta. But those games, as exciting as I thought the second game might be, oh my God! I could not have been happier to watch Urban Meyer get snowballed. That was great. But that game was awful. So the good news for me on New Year's Eve is I didn't miss much because I was able to watch the beginning of the game. I realized it was going pretty sour, and I sat there kind of in the corner and just kept updating my screen to get scores. But the good news about the New Year's Eve party is I did find like two guys who actually wanted to talk sports. So we just sat in the corner and reminisced about 80s era NBA basketball. It was actually wonderful. It was sublime. All right, we got to take a break really soon. So this is a sports program. Today we're going to be talking with Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal about the fact that maybe steroid guys can get into the Hall of Fame. It seems that there's been a shift in the voters' perception over the last couple of years, particularly this year. It looks like Bonds and Clements are getting closer than before to making it into the Hall of Fame. Whether they make it this year or not is up for debate, but at the very least, it looks like they might have a shot later on, which is something that I don't think anyone really thought was possible just a few years ago. We'll be talking about that. We're going to do an esoteric sports topic with Jim Cotter, talking about two things that I like, the Hall of Fame voting and karaoke, two of my favorite things. Second hour, we're talking about the stress of coaching. Coach K's back out. Not to use the pun, but his back is gone. Like, he's getting surgery. That dude is out.
I get it.
Yeah. That was unintentional. That's just radio wizardry. It's magic. You can't create that. So he's gonzo, and Grayson Allen's got to fend for himself now. And so he's gonzo, and that's going to happen. And then the middle of the second hour, about 11:30, we're talking about whether or not Lane Kiffin should have been kicked out. Whether coaches should be allowed to stay on and finish out their term, even when they have another job, or whether once you sign on the dotted line, you're a traitor and it's time to get rid of you. So we'll be talking about that, and then we'll do some grades of the week. It's going to be a great show, Jeff Brault or not. It's going to be a huge show. So stick around. Check out the live stream. Find us on Twitter. That's at ESPN_classroom. Or find me or the Center for Sports Communication. Find our Facebook page, the Marist College Center for Sports Communication. Watch this live stream. Listen. We'll be doing all of that. And when you come back after the break, we'll be talking with Jared Diamond, who's a great guest, by the way, from the Wall Street Journal. So we'll be talking about that when we come back on the flip side, the classroom on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Back in the classroom, Dr. Keith Strudler here, Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. And do you guys get into, of course, Jeff Brault out on location. We're going to be talking with Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal quite soon about the voting for the Hall of Fame. Is our phone working?
Yeah, our phone's working. You always think that something's not working.
Well, because we should have him on already.
Yeah.
Are you sure it's working?
Yeah, he just called in.
All right, good. So are you guys Hall of Fame guys?
No, I'm not a big Hall of Fame guy.
I'm not either.
You know, Doug's actually from Cooperstown.
Oh my God! Doug is our production guy running the whole video stream here today. They seem to have just walked out. I've noticed that. But
it's a good title. Production guy.
But he's the production guy. He's the production. He's the video production guy.
Doug went to Cooperstown High School.
That's
in
amazing.
Cooperstown, New York. Yeah,
that's got to be horrible. Actually,
yeah, he hates it.
Just people come and go. It's like growing up in like the Bahamas.
Really touristy.
Everyone just comes. But it's even worse because the people that come to Bahamas are like just laying out on the beach. People in Cooperstown are like, oh, it's so nostalgic, so lovely, it's so magical here.
They're really like snobbish about it. Yeah,
so much history. It's got to be annoying. But regardless, well, I grew up there, so I'm not. Look, I've never put a ton of stock in Hall of Fames in general. This idea that they are somehow these magical arbiters of what matters and what doesn't. To me, you kind of enjoy the moment and move on, and it's hard to compare eras, and it's hard to, you know, to think what would have happened if this guy played then, and does this guy deserve this, and he had 300X or 400Y. Like, that stuff doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think things happen, and then you move on. I also have a very hard time dealing with the PED era of anything, because it's so beyond anything that we can do anything about, and these things happen in the periods in which they exist, right? I understand that taking PEDs is cheating, and I understand that keeping the Russians out of the Olympics is probably a good thing because, A, they screwed with our election, and B...
So how does that make it a good
thing? I'm just telling you. No, I'm saying that's why we should punish them, because they screwed with our election, and you can't do that. And B, they violated what seems like the historic, or at least recently historic, norms of the Olympics. Like, post-1988, when everyone's like, all right, we're going to have to stop doing this, it seems as though they've really gone above and beyond. And cheating isn't about whether you're breaking the rules, but whether you're breaking the norms. So I have a hard time understanding, like, or even contextualizing whether or not we should be putting Bonds and Clements in the Hall. I am sure, over the course of the last 10 years, I've written a commentary, like an NPR commentary, supporting both sides of this argument. Because that's what I do. I like to hedge my... This is like the way I deal with religion. I look at it this
way. You like to hedge your bets.
Well, exactly. I'm good with all gods. Because I don't... And if... Maybe there's a heaven, maybe not. But I'll let's pretend. Because if there is one...
It's just a guessing game to you?
Well, if there is one, I want to be in it. Because I had a... I won't say this on the air. I had a version of what my hell would be like. I read a lot of French existentialist literature. And they're like Sartre, you know, certainly discussed what hell is like, and I know what my hell is like.
Okay, go.
No, I can't. I can't do it. I won't. It involves me reading Facebook posts.
of somebody yes. in particular?
Yes, forever.
Do I know this person?
We're not doing it. We're not doing this. I'm just saying that is my hell. Having to endlessly read someone's Facebook post, just and it never ends. It just goes on and on and on. And I just have to sit there and read it. That is my version of hell. And if that hell exists, I want to believe in heaven. So I'm playing for that. Okay. I don't care. You name your God, I'm with it. All right. So but I don't know what to do with this baseball thing. It seems though as though the voters are starting to, I don't know if it's forgive, forget, or reconcile the fact that steroids happened. We're going to have to address the players that played in that era, and maybe keeping those people out of Cooperstown, the place that is the historical marker of what happened in baseball over the course of our lifetimes and beyond. Maybe that's not the smartest way to go about that. To talk about that in detail, and certainly more knowledgeably than any of us clowns can, is Jared Diamond, a baseball writer for the Wall Street Journal, who's going to give us his perspective on whether or not these guys are going to get into the Hall and whether they should get into the Hall. Jared, welcome to the classroom.
How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. So, first off, do you think that that Clemens and Bonds are going to get into the Hall of Fame this year?
Oh, no, absolutely not. It won't even be that close. I'd be surprised if they even top 60% on the ballot. You need 75% to get in. This will be their best performance on the ballot of all the years they've been on. But this year, and probably not next year, I still don't see them getting in. They're not there yet. But it's clear the way it's trending. They're trending up. And based on what we're seeing, you have to think that one day, before they're off the ballot, after 10 years on the ballot, they will eventually get in. Not sure when. Don't think it'll be in the next year or two. But I think it's going to happen sooner or later.
Do you think this is because of changing attitudes on steroids or something else?
Well, we've seen a shift for sure in how people view PED users or suspected PED users in terms of the Hall of Fame. I think Mike Piazza's election last year was the start of it. He was a guy that, by any statistical measure, was a first ballot Hall of Famer who was kept out for years because there was a section of the voters that refused to put anyone in who they even suspected used PEDs. And in the case of Piazza, that changed last year. And now this year, in the case of Jeff Bagwell, that's going to change. Another guy who should have been an early Hall of Fame entrant. Going to get in now in his seventh or eighth year because all of a sudden people are saying, well, we really can't be judge and jury of who may have done PEDs. But then you look at Manny Ramirez, who's one of the best hitters of all time, who was suspended for using PEDs two times. He's not even close. He's, polling at 25%, something like that, 20%. So clearly that's been the line that's been drawn, which is if we know you did it, you're still not getting in. But if we just suspect it, we have some reason to believe, but not real evidence, you could go in. That's a shift in what we've seen previously.
There's been a kind of a rhetoric that the divide comes between younger and older voters. Is that something you've seen, or is that just kind of the outside perception, that people who are a little younger, the millennials for sure, are a little bit more, subjective on the steroid thing, or at least view steroid use differently, maybe because they grew up with it, than people that are kind of, from an older generation that sees steroids and cheating in black and white. Is there a generational divide?
Yeah, absolutely. And part of this is because a lot of the older voters have been culled from the voting block. In the last couple of years, there's been rules passed that if you haven't covered baseball for at least 10 years, you don't get your vote, which it used to be a lifetime honor that if you ever got your vote, you got to keep it forever, no more. So every year there's more and more older voters who are not allowed to vote anymore, which has helped some of these alleged or suspected PED users, because younger voters certainly have different viewpoints on it. I don't have a vote. I'm too young, had not even come really. I'm still 6 years away, but I know just from my perspective, if I did have a vote, I'd be very liberal with potential PED users. I think most people from my generation would. And the reason for that is because that's all we've ever known. Baseball, my whole life, PEDs and steroids were just part of the game. It wasn't something that you thought of as being this scandalous, controversial thing. Yes, we knew it was wrong and it wasn't supposed to be in the game, But to not put these guys in the Hall of Fame, and this is just me speaking, almost feels like it's erasing all my memories and erasing my childhood completely. And I just don't think you could do that. These were players that played. They're the only players I ever knew for my entire life. Great players. And to just ignore them feels like you're just sort of what my experience was for all those years didn't count or didn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd like to say erasing memories from my childhood for me and my therapy sessions. I don't need that in my baseball. No, but I wonder how the commissioner's office comes down on this, because to some degree, I mean, baseball has worked really hard to clean up the sport, or at least the perception of the sport. And I think more so than other sports, they've had a huge mountain to climb. I mean, football can kind of just play around. Baseball really had to change the narrative. And they've done a pretty good job with that. Do you think the commissioner's office worries that allowing Bonds, Clements, some of these players that were very much at the forefront of the steroid era kind of drags them back into that? Do you think there's an opinion that comes from the commissioner's office?
This is a conversation that's been going on every single year about Bonds and Clements. I think the commissioner's office would love if we weren't having this conversation every year. I'm sure they will love when it's over, when these guys are either elected in or off the ballot, just so we're no longer talking about it, because to have every single year this whole conversation about PEDs, certainly not what Rob Manfred wants, considering how hard he and others before him have worked to now try to change it. And has done generally a very good job, but it's impossible to ignore it for these 2 months a year when we're in balloting season, because this is all of PED years, and this was bound to happen. It was going to happen eventually, where these guys were going to be up for the Hall of Fame, and there was going to be the conversations about it. It's not exactly the look baseball wants when they're heading into what's supposed to be one of their real prestigious, you know, events, which is the Hall of Fame reveal. But this is what you get for letting PEDs run rampant in the game for as long as they did. Bud Selig and the media and the players, everyone was responsible. Now everyone is facing the repercussions of it.
Yeah, it seemed like for some people, at least from what I read, once Bud Selig gets in, then all of a sudden you have to let everyone in. Was that a big moment for a lot of people?
I've definitely seen some writers say that has changed their minds. I'm surprised. I'm not sure it's as prevalent of a belief as maybe has been reported in some places. While I do think there's a handful of writers that affected, I find that logic to be a little bit strange, just because the writers didn't vote in Bud Selig. He was voted in by, you know, another panel. So it's not as if you put Bud Selig in. Why does that change your feeling on things? But I understand why they're saying, well, Bud Selig was the one that allowed this to happen under his watch, so he's honored. Those players that he enabled should be honored. I just don't think it's fair, and I'm not saying I'm a huge Bud Selig fan, but I don't think it's necessarily fair to pin all of PED era on him. This is something that everyone in the baseball industry was responsible for. Yes, Bud Selig had a role, but so did the players' union and the players and the media for not digging into the issue until it was too late. Everyone sort of just let it go, because ultimately these players putting up the numbers they did was good for the game coming out of the strike, and everyone was willing to turn a blind eye. So to say this is all Bud Selig's fault that we're in this position, I just don't think it's fair to Bud Selig. And I think he's, in a way, his reputation is maybe worse than it should be. He's done some bad things for the game, but he also did some good things for the game, and I think get ignored sometimes in these conversations.
Yeah, and it's a tough look. The baseball commissioner's job is tough because you don't have a lot of power. It's one of those states. It's like being governor of North Carolina right now. they just stripped all your powers away from you. So how much has, and this is, I apologize if this question gets a little meta, but there's been a big shift just in the journalism industry over the past 10, 15 years. And I think the role of baseball writers has changed. The role of journalism has changed. We've seen papers go away. We've seen new kind of journalistic enterprises come to the forefront. How has the changing nature of the journalism industry changed the way in which baseball writers and baseball media might address the vote? Or has it? Am I just thinking way too hard here?
No, absolutely not. We've seen every single year more and more baseball writers, voters say, I'm not going to vote because I don't think that I should be voting as a writer. More and more media outlets instructing their writers to abstain from all votes for any sort of award. And I do have some problem with it on one level, because every single year when we get into this time of year and this conversation starts, it all just becomes about the media. It's the media talking about itself. I cannot stand how many articles I read in newspapers quoting other writers, asking them for their opinions on their ballots and why they voted a certain way. That does sort of go against journalism 101, which is we're supposed to be reporting the news, not making the news. And in the Hall of Fame vote, it's impossible to avoid creating the news. We are creating the news. We're the ones voting these guys in. I don't know what a better alternative is. Now, the NFL has a totally different way of doing the Hall of Fame, and I think most people would say that's even more flawed than the way baseball does it. So I also understand, on the other hand, that this is the Baseball Hall of Fame. We're not talking about, you know, something that important in the grand scheme of things. And ultimately, does it really matter that the journalists are the ones doing it? It's baseball. It's not, you know, politics or war. I don't know the answer. I don't know if there's a better solution, but I'd certainly respect any writer that chooses to abstain for that reason. I think it's perfectly valid.
Kind of a question that piggytails off that. Baseball is doing quite well. I think much better than I ever thought baseball would have been doing in 2016 or 2017 right now. Is it not? Mike, 2017? Mike, 2017? It's 2017. All right, so I went to a party that indicated just that the other day, where they had an actual announcement, a proclamation. So at midnight, and I was stuck there not watching the Clemson game because I was stuck in this party where they didn't even have cable television.
Watch it.
I didn't even have cable television. Who doesn't have cable television?
No, those people.
They exactly sitting there eating organic kale chips, and I can't watch television.
I mean,
don't. You, we're not going to start because I'm going to get in trouble, and then I'm going to get an earful from my wife on the way home, all right? And I don't need that, all right? I'll get that anyway. All right, so today, baseball, though, it's doing very well. I think it's doing surprisingly well with younger fans. And maybe I'm biased because I'm in the Northeast, and I actually see, you know, younger kids that still care about baseball. I know as an aggregate it's not. We see the national polls. We do it here with the Marist poll. We get that. Do you think that the Hall of Fame still matters like it used to?
Look, I don't know if anything in baseball matters quite the way it used to. You know, if we go back to the glory days of baseball 40, 50 years ago, I don't think baseball is ever going to captivate the nation in the way that it did then, at least for everybody across the country. I don't think really anyone should expect that anymore. Baseball is no longer the most popular sport in America. It probably never will be again. But I think it's clear that these reports of baseball's death have been greatly exaggerated. Baseball's doing incredibly well, making so much money. It's coming off one of the most watched postseasons really in decades. A lot of that to do with the Chicago Cubs, but still people tuned in. So I think the Hall of Fame does still matter. I think people clearly love it still. We see every year the conversation on social media, the debate that goes on for 2 months, the amount of passion that people have for who gets a plaque in that little room in Cooperstown, still something people love the debate, and I think that's ultimately good. There would be no other reason why we'd be talking about baseball for 2 months in December and January if not for the Hall of Fame. And the event in Cooperstown is still a lot of fun to see all the players up there on that stage. So, look, I'm not going to say it's the same as it was in 1955, but I think people still love it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm not a Hall of Fame guy. I think baseball is doing well. Our polls, I mean, the Cubs blew away everything in our year-end merits poll as the most, you know, impressive accomplishment of the year. So I do think that baseball has quite a bit of relevance. I understand the NFL is our national sport, although who knows how long that's going to last, particularly if you're going to have to watch that Oakland-Houston game. You might give up already. So I have two questions for you to find out. First one is obvious one. What do you think the timeline is for Bonds and Clemens?
I think you'll see him get in the next 5 years, 3, 4, 5 years. I think just looking at the polling data, what we've seen this year and next year are pretty much off the table. But after that, I think it's certainly a possibility. We'll see how big of a jump they get next year. I do think, though, in the next 5 years, I think we're talking about them getting in.
All right, and last question. This goes back to something we talked about a little bit earlier on the show. Has nothing to do with baseball. It's a 105-year-old guy who set a cycling record. It's like a 105-year-old guy in France got in a velodrome, 105. He set a record. Now, for his age group, which Mike Wallace, of course, disparaged, of course, made fun of a 105-year-old man. Classy. All right?
Did not.
You know, he rode almost 15 miles. Almost 15 miles. 105-year-old guy. Where does this rank in your perspective as a baseball writer in terms of the greatest accomplishments ever?
Wow, that's a big question. Look, I think just waking up in the morning at 105 is a pretty big accomplishment.
That's
right?
What I'm saying.
Yes.
So if you could not only wake up, but also get on a bicycle, I think every single thing that person did at 105 is a big accomplishment. You know, getting out of bed, getting breakfast, getting his bike to the place.
Yep.
Yeah, see,
riding it was just, you know, the cherry on top.
So I'll ask you this. Would you cover, as a sports writer, that guy having a race against one of my very likely hungover interns?
Who do you think would win?
Yeah, I
105-year-old man.
That's a great mystery. That guy would be on his A game.
Whoa. Let's get the times first before we make any bets.
He went up.
Yeah.
Full, he went
yeah
almost,
what time is it?
Oh, we're doing it at 8 a.m.
8 a.m.?
8 a.m.
What was the 105?
Well, if it's 8 a.m., then obviously the 105-year-old has got there. He's already been awake for 3 hours.
That's right. He's already he's already gone to the bathroom like four times. You're on a velodrome. You're on a flat velodrome. He went almost 15 miles. I'm looking at you guys. I don't even think you can sit on a bike seat for 15 miles.
I can't even spell
velodrome. All right. Jared Diamond, Wall Street Journal. Follow him on Twitter. Check him out online. Go read his stuff. Thank you very much for coming on The Classroom.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, interesting. So it sounds like, look, Jared is a younger baseball writer. It sounds like he is very much of the ilk that, look, I'm not going to hold on to this kind of line in the sand that if you did PEDs or we think you did PEDs, you're not in. Is that the way you guys are?
No, I like steroids. I think we should have more of them. It's more fun. Baseball's more fun. Bring back steroids.
So you're of the ilk that they should get even more credit.
Yeah. Well, no, not more credit.
But you don't think we should test it all?
Yeah. I like those players. What they did was impressive.
I don't like those players. They're two of the bigger. Well, look.
Bigger heads.
Bigger jerks. Excuse me. But true. But now look, Bonds was just surly.
Hit 756 home runs.
But he was surly, and so I actually don't put him. Clemens was not a nice guy. I mean, let's lay that on the table. Bonds was surly, right? And there's there's the guy that's kind of a cranky dude. That's Bonds. Bonds is the guy you're like, no, don't trick or treat at his house.
I mean,
Clemens is the guy's like, don't ever go there.
Oh, Clemens is the guy who threw a broken bat at Mike Piazza just because he broke a bat.
Yep. Clemens is the guy who said, I couldn't have been taking a shot of steroids at that time because my trainer was actually giving a shot to my wife. My wife's ass, excuse the language, at that particular moment. That's literally his excuse. His excuse. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back and do an esoteric sports topic debated in unnecessary detail about the Hall of Fame and about karaoke, two things that go naturally together. We'll be doing that when we come back on the flip side in The Classroom on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Electronic robotic cars were actually made in a factory in Mexico. And so, so I think
but not for long. We're moving out to Detroit.
So at any rate, we're going to be talking about. We had a great conversation about the Hall of Fame. Do you think the Bonds and Clemens should get in the Hall of Fame?
Do I think they should?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. I do think so, and I think they will.
Well, you and Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal are in agreement then. So you have that going for you. Well, I think. Look, no one.
Do you think so?
You know, I really don't care. That's just something I care about. I mean,
but let me ask you a question. Was it something you cared about at one point?
Houston Rockets.
I used to care about the Houston Rockets. Yeah,
your family.
No, did you used to care about Bonds getting in the Hall of Fame?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know that I ever really cared about it because I'm not a Hall of Fame guy. Like,
sure, I agree. But I do think that there is this sort of like aging and mellowing of people that really did care and sort of disliked those people. Those people are all getting older, and I think that that's sort of what's cooling it down. And people like your interns, they weren't around when those guys were being really surly, and it was frustrating watching them pass, the legends of our childhood on these lists that we used to think were important.
I think the attitude is a big part of it. And this is the truth for anything. If you apologize, you can get away with anything. Trust me.
Yeah, no.
I know. So you can apologize for anything. And I think they never really apologized. Whether they had to or not is irrelevant. But I think a lot of this could have been changed if they had. Now, the other side of it is there was almost no incentive for them to apologize, because as soon as they admit they did it, they're going to get punished. So it doesn't help them. I mean, that's the worst part. Like, if at any point they'd be like, yep, I'm doing it, they'd be like, great, 2-year suspension. I mean, so it doesn't help you.
I mean, what happened to Andy Pettit? I mean, how big was the punishment for him?
That's true. He got away with it. He got away pretty easily. I mean, he's not a Hall of Fame guy, I believe, but he's certainly revered and loved.
He appears to be a lot nicer person than either of those two guys.
Well, that's not hard. All right, but you know what makes someone appear to be more likable and more friendly? The thing that I think is the litmus of likability is karaoke.
Right.
Of course. How did it take us so long to get here?
Yeah.
Well, it's hard.
We just had a 7-minute lead in for karaoke.
It's hard.
Let's get into it.
But it's hard not to like someone who does karaoke. Look, what is perhaps the most fun segment on television? Carpool karaoke.
Okay.
Carpool karaoke.
See, you wanted me to say a specific answer, and
yes,
I wasn't going to get
exactly.
There.
I gave you. There was one correct answer. It's carpool karaoke. Jim, do you watch carpool karaoke?
I do not. I think I've seen it on. I think I've seen clips of it online, though.
Yeah, it's great. You get celebrities in there. You get the actual singers in there singing with you. That's great. And so everyone, it humanizes you when you get up there at your most vulnerable, and you sing your heart out. And you let it rip, and you let yourself be more human. People love you. So my theory is one way that both of these guys, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, could become a little bit more likable with the audience was to do a very public karaoke, to get up on stage and just sing their lungs out, let it rip, right? But that said, I think there's a better way to do it and a worse way to do it. Some songs might reflect really well on the performers. And some songs might, make them look even worse, depending on, if it had a certain bravado attached to it. All right? So that's it. And the lead into this, of course, is everyone who, if you listened last week, knows when I was in Jamaica over the holidays, I did karaoke, and I decided to sing We Are the World. Because, as Mike pointed out, why just be one celebrity when you could be all of them?
You could.
So it makes perfect sense.
It's really telling.
So it's a hard song to sing. It's not as easy as you think it is.
Did you change your voice as you did it?
I tried. I tried to do Kenny Rogers. I tried to do Ray Charles.
Did you go Bruce from Cyndi Lauper to Springsteen?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of them are easier.
How'd that go?
They all sounded remarkably similar.
How's your Lionel Richie?
Lionel Richie is great.
Yeah?
Lionel Richie is not my Lionel Richie. I just think Lionel Richie is great.
You're Stevie Wonder?
Stevie Wonder's tough.
Yeah.
And whenever I sing Stevie Wonder, I'm singing Superstition. Everyone's Superstition. It's actually everyone's favorite bar mitzvah song, too. So, well, they play it at every bar mitzvah. Every bar mitzvah has an R&B band. That's just the thing.
Sure.
R&B, and same with Jewish weddings. That's the deal.
All right, so karaoke.
So Jim, so that the esoteric...
Wait a minute. You're telling me at bar mitzvahs, they play this, anti-religious song, Superstition?
Yeah, is that tradition? Is that Jewish tradition?
You're way overthinking this.
When you believe in things that you don't understand, you would suffer superstition. That song?
You are way overthinking this. I think it's
in the lyrics. What do you mean overthinking it? It literally says those words.
He's thinking this through perfectly fine.
I don't want to hear about any of your voodoo. I'm just. You have to go along. You have to just. Follow along. Follow along. So, yes, I mean, I think Judaism is very... Maybe it's more only at the Reformed weddings.
Okay, so what's our esoteric
Not
topic.
At the Orthodox. All right? They stick a little bit more to Hava Nagila. How about that? So, the esoteric sports topic is, what song should either Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens sing karaoke to make them more likable with the voters? What would be the best song? Jim, I'll let you go first.
Sure. So we're going to pick the one that we actually think they would sing, but the one that they ought to sing the best.
Yes.
Because I thought. Oh, okay. So I had the topic wrong. I was thinking that I could imagine Barry Bonds getting up there singing Carly Simon's "Nobody Does It Better." I think that's what he would select.
That's a good one, too. Can we get that up there? Yeah. All right.
But I don't know that that would help his case. It would, but I do think he would be motivated to sing that because he would remind people of exactly how awesome he was.
Sure. You want me to give you my answer? I'll give you a second.
Yes, I think I might want to need a little more. I might need a little more time because the topic sort of shifted out from under me.
That's a great song, Carly Simon.
It's
great.
Yeah.
All right, Dr. Strudler, your rebuttal.
Yeah. All right. So my song, I happen to think, by the way, they will do better singing a woman's song than a guy's song. I think it exposes them a little bit more, makes them seem more vulnerable.
Right, so Carly Simon.
But I think he needs to go the opposite direction of this, of the vanity play, and to simply let it be known. I feel like that's really loud right now. Make it be known that these guys, Clemens Bonds, give credit to other people. So I think he would look directly in the eyes of the writers, people like Jared Diamond, who was just on the program,
right,
and sing this. Bette Midler's Wing Beneath My Wings. That's what he should sing. If he looked out and said...
But he shouldn't. That's so disingenuous, right? People are going to see right through that. They're going to hear him sing that. We were not the wind beneath your wings. There's no way. They're going to be... What you really thought about was yourself. Nobody does it better.
I think at that point, he's just pandering.
Just imagine.
He's trying too hard.
They've got to... They're going to show themselves being vulnerable by missing the notes of the Carly Simon song, but they still have to be true to themselves enough so that it doesn't come across as disingenuous.
All right, how about this? Then this is my second pick. How about we go to An Emotion and sing Don't You Want Me, Baby? I was working as a waitress at a cocktail bar. That much. And Bonds and Clemens do it as a duet.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
that's my idea is the duet.
That much
you
is
do
true.
A duet.
Even now.
But I think then they should do... Leather and Lace, if they're going to do a duet.
Well, look, if we're going to do that, if we're going down this rabbit hole, it's Ebony and Ivory. Are we? It's got to be. It's got to be.
Clemens and Bonds on a piano playing chopsticks.
That's the winner. That is the winner. Ebony and Ivory. But let's just play. Let us take this to break. Ebony and Ivory, that would be your winner. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. That would get them into the Hall of Fame even quicker. Jim Cotter, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, have a great day.
I hope the Cats do well.
Me too. Bye.
And turned you into someone new. Now, 5 years later on, you've got the world at your feet. Success has been so easy for you. Don't forget it. What happened?
I wanted you to keep going. We wanted the acapella. You're going.
Now I can put you back there, too. All right, we got to go to break. Next hour, we're going to be talking with Brian Garrity of University of Denver about the physical and emotional tolls of coaching, including what's going on with Coach K at Duke right now, who put a hurting on Marist at the beginning of this season. We'll be talking about that for the second hour of the classroom on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Communication, welcoming you to the second hour of the classroom on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Streaming online, audio, go to foxradio.net or go to our live stream. Watch the thing. Just put it on your Apple TV, put it on your, Hulu, Roku. I got all these, your Chromecast. I got like 8 of these in my house.
Wait, really? Why?
Oh, I got everything. I might as well have like a satellite dish. We have everything. If they sell it and you can watch it, we've got it.
Why? How many TVs do you have?
I got like 5, 6 TVs. I don't know.
And 8 different streaming?
I have 8 different streaming devices. I mean, everything. Sometimes my wife will plug one of them in and do like Zumba.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, because you can get like all...
Yeah, you can get like YouTube videos on. Yeah.
So we got all kinds of stuff going on. So I like to watch everything. The show I'm watching right now on Netflix, another thing I got, is... Last Chance U, and I'm only halfway through. It's just ridiculous. It's so good. It's so good.
I haven't watched it yet. What's it like?
It's about. And I know this is old news for everyone who's listening, but it's about a junior college in Mississippi, where a lot of athletes end up. A lot of really good football players end up for one reason or another to get a second chance. Right. A lot of players that have had some kind of issue, whether it was a physical issue, whether it was an emotional issue, whether it was a scholastic issue, whether it was a family issue, that this is their last real shot, these great athletes, to potentially get a Division I look, or a major Division I look. And some of them have even been at Division I and then kind of fallen back to this. And it's just their stories and the team story. And this is a historic program, one that wins national titles. And everything about it is fascinating. Like, there's not a part of it that's not interesting. And you can even if you don't like sports, and we are the sports show to listen to if you don't like sports. That's our thing.
Yeah, that is not the
show.
Our thing.
That's our thing. So, but even if you don't like sports, you can like the show because it's the personal stories, and every character seems to have a flaw, which is what there's no good and bad. There's just all these imperfect characters working in an imperfect system. So I highly encourage you to watch that. To me, big win. So I'm kind of catching. You know, what got me onto that one.
What?
Frankel got me onto that one.
Yeah, of course.
So he got me onto that, and I'm working my way through that. And now you can download on Netflix, which is huge.
Yeah, bring it on a plane.
Oh, exactly. So I did that. So I'm watching that, and I've got a few other things kind of in the queue that I want to catch up. And then, of course, I got stuck the other night because Alec Baldwin is hosting Match Game.
And that made you stuck?
Oh,
yeah. How did it?
Oh, I couldn't.
How did it get you stuck?
Because as soon as I flipped it, I'm like, oh my God.
Honey, just leave the kids.
No,
Alec Baldwin is on the TV and he's hosting a game show.
He's hosting a 70s era game show. Oh my God, it was unbelievable. It was amazing.
All right, so what's a game show?
I literally wanted them to bring back the ghost of Charles Nelson Reilly. I'll take Charles Nelson Reilly for the block. Circle takes a square.
Did he have one of those really skinny microphones?
He did. He had like a cigarette mic. It was unbelievable. They totally recreated the whole thing. It was the greatest. Oh, it was.
What's the show about?
Well, you have to they give you a question and you try to match your answer to the celebrity, and they're always like semi B list celebrities, and so, is our phone working? I hear a weird noise. Are you sure it's working?
Yeah, keep talking.
Are you sure they're on? Then why am I hearing that noise? Are you sure?
Yeah, no.
They're off.
All right. So Alec Baldwin, skinny microphone, 70s game show.
Exactly. All right, so now they're back in. So Alec Baldwin's on. We got a skinny mic. And I can't not watch that. You know what's interesting?
What?
I was actually texting Frankel. And I'm like, he's like, oh, you got to watch this? I'm like, oh, yeah, but I'm stuck on Match Game with Alec Baldwin. And he wrote back, me too. It's so good. So they'll be like, they just ask these crazy questions, like, craziest thing you can put in your suitcase, and someone will be like, a hot dog, and you have to see if you get the same answer.
It's just esoteric.
It's crazy stuff. It's such a great show. I highly encourage you, go watch Match Game. Good theater, all right? It'll cheer you up. All right.
You're not sponsored by Match Game.
No, I'm not. I'd love to meet Alec Baldwin. I have an in. I think I could meet him. I'm going to try to get him to the Hannah Storm event.
You could probably play him in Words with Friends.
No, yeah. When he's on an airplane, I'm going to try to get him. I'm going to try to get him. I've got a contact. I don't know but I'd love to get him to the Hannah Storm event. That thing
does
is
he
shaping
know Hannah
up.
Storm?
I'm sure he does. All famous people know other famous people.
That
they have a con. They have a con.
Right.
They have a common connection. I can't disclose this on the air.
It's like the seven things of Kevin Bacon.
Yes.
Exactly. They're all the seven degrees of Kevin.
There's a connection. There's a connection there.
Everybody's connected somehow.
I want to get out. Boy, I'd love to get Alec Baldwin there. Love that. He's funny.
Yeah,
so,
he is.
So you know who's going to have a
President
lot?
President Trump.
Who's going to have a lot? Oh God, he's good in that. Who would have a lot of time right now to sit and watch Match Game? It's Coach K.
Yeah,
he's sitting in bed right now.
Ice in his back.
Not coaching the Duke Blue Devils, which is a team that, despite maybe a few hiccups early in the season
and trips,
certainly has legitimate national title aspirations, and I think is a team that could make some noise, certainly a tournament. The ACC is dirty right now. It is dirty. It's crazy. And the level of competition is high, and there's a lot of teams that only have two losses. There's going to be a lot of fallout in that conference. Right now, they're
and I'm sure the thing that makes you the most happy is Syracuse basketball.
It's terrible.
ACC is great, and Syracuse is bad.
They still beat Cornell by like 30.
Oh, yeah, they did.
but that's fine. But so, I do love that. But the ACC is dirty, and the stress level is high. And Coach K has pulled himself out, which looks like for a good month, to have back surgery. And this is the second time second time he's had to sit out. And both of those times, it seemed as if the removal, him kind of pulling himself out, was as much emotional as it was physical. And it seems as though while uh, while there are some obvious physical trauma that he's going to have to deal with, there's a lot of emotional trauma that goes into this as well. And Coach K has been doing this and other things, whether it's, you know, the U.S. team, for a long time at a very high level with a lot of spotlight in a sport where there is no time to rest. I mean, college basketball at the highest level is a grind. The recruiting, the night after, I mean, you're playing a long schedule. You don't have the time to really scout it out. You're dealing with kids. It's not the NBA where it's kind of adults. And you know, an NBA coach is kind of a, I mean, what are they doing? I mean, the NBA coach is not doing a whole heck of a lot. As you can see, they replace coaches and the teams stay good and they stay bad. Mm-hmm. College coaches matter a lot because they determine everything. And they don't have they certainly don't have the football staff. I think, in particular, a position like the one that Coach K has is particularly stressful. But I think that's true for a lot of coaching positions.
And Coach K isn't just the Duke coach. He's also Team USA.
Mm. He's Team USA. He is, in many cases, the spokesman of the university. He gets blamed for things like, should Grayson Allen have been suspended longer? Like, things that seem
a lot of that was he didn't want that burden to be on Jeff Capel.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But these are high-stress positions, and I don't think they're unusual. Look, I've had conversations with our coach, with Mike Maker, and I can tell that he doesn't get a lot of free time. And this is at a low Division I level where the expectations are certainly not that of Duke, and he's certainly not getting paid Duke money. So this happens at all levels. The stress, both physical, emotional, psychological, is very high. And as these games get more important and as there's more stress to win and more media coverage of these teams, it only gets worse. To talk about the stress of coaching and what this means for the coaches and whether this is a healthy thing is Brian Garrity, who is the director of the master's program at Denver University. The master's program, excuse me, in coaching. I need to get a better description of this. I'm reading off some bad literature, so I'm not doing a good job. That's why I need Jeff here.
You know that.
That's why I need Jeff here.
We really pride ourselves on our prep work here.
He's the master's of arts in sport coaching program at the University of Denver. Is that better? You happy now? I need a Jeff here to.
You don't need to make me happy.
Well, I do. See, that I'm going under this stress. I am a lot like Coach K, where I'm having to keep it all together, and it all falls on my shoulder, and the live stream, and the whole deal. All right. Brian, welcome to the classroom.
You can hear me?
Oh, yeah, we can hear you. Brian, you're on.
Wonderful.
Welcome to the classroom.
I'm glad you got the title and university correct.
I got that right, didn't I?
We've gotten it wrong
before. You got it right. You were really starting to stress me out a little bit.
Yeah, well. All right, Brian, give us a little back. What's going on with Coach K?
Oh, looks like he had back surgery.
Is it more than that?
I'm happy to report when I performed the surgery, everything worked out well. He's going to make a full recovery.
Excellent.
Being the strength coach that I am, too, I'm also going to help him with his rehabilitation.
You know what? By the way, my wife's back is killing her right now, so you can take a little stress off my load and help her out, too.
That's probably the number one reason for stress relief right there.
How much of the physical trauma that Coach K is going under has to deal with the stress of his job?
Hard to say. I looked real quickly, too, and it looks like right 20 years ago he had some type of back problem before that took him out for the season.
Yeah.
No, so he's, you know, at this age, too, you know, he's 69 years old. You know, this is where everybody's going to make some type of diagnosis and say there's just some type of congenital condition that's going to, you know, continue to deteriorate over time, which is not all that informative because generally over time, all of our bodies get a little bit worse.
Yeah. But,
unless you're 105 French.
105-year-old French cyclist and go 15 miles in an hour. But one of the things we read in some of his past kind of removal from the game to deal with physical issues, there's been some psychiatrists on staff who have helped him kind of work his way through this. Mm-hmm. How stressful emotionally is coaching at the top level?
At the top level, very much. Yeah, I've actually seen too. You know, Urban Meyer, you know, is another good example of somebody that got out. And it's nice to see. I said that I think the positives, what we're seeing is, especially a lot of these male coaches are talking about their physical and mental health issues, which is important because, you know, we have a tendency to not talk about them, push them behind, and then just keep so-called grinding out, and, you know, that only exacerbates the problems.
And does a coach like a Coach K or an Urban Meyer, do they have time to take care of themselves physically?
Everybody has the same. You know, the coaches are here. Coach is going to tell an athlete, right? You got 24 hours in a day. You got 7 days a week, same as everybody else. What are you going to do with it? So if the coaches value taking care of themselves and their physical and mental health, then they can make time for it. And that's exactly what they need to do, one, to handle the stress of that level, and then to, you know, live a life outside of sports too. That, you know, a lot of them are making a lot of money, and they coach, you know, a lot of these older coaches too, like Coach K got in it at a time when they weren't making that type of money. But, you know, have a life, live your life, you know, do great things with coaching, but have some balance a little bit, you know, so that way, you know, you're not deteriorating and then deteriorating those around you as well.
But now, do you honestly think, you teach people who want to go into coaching, you study coaching, do coaches at that level realistically have time to be able to say, hey, I'm going to take the afternoon off, hit the gym, play a little racquetball, yep, go to the chiropractor? I mean, do they actually have time to do that?
It's about your values. If they value it, they can make time. So, you know, some of the coaches I've been around, you've seen them make time for it. You know, I've seen, you know, Coach Fulmer at Tennessee when I was there would get up and work out. Coach Cutcliffe.
That surprises me. Yeah. Did not see Fulmer as a gym rat. You're telling me that guy hit the gym?
He hit the gym. You know, there's guys too, and you look at Fulmer and you look at other coaches too, right? And everybody's body's different. I don't want to get off track and looking at, you know, why some bodies are different, but John Chavis was another guy. Dan Brooks, you know, now at Clemson. Those guys were in the weight room religiously every morning, usually before everybody, you know, 5:30, doing their routines.
I could see the early morning guys. Like Steve Spurrier used to go out and run steps at University of Florida. He seemed like a guy who was able to keep it. No one ever thought that Steve Spurrier was going to break down mentally or physically, because he seemed like he had it relatively in check. Given then he got, right, just walked away from the University of South Carolina in the middle of the season. But hey, who wouldn't? You know. But are there, in a lot of universities, are there systems in place that help people deal with these issues? I mean, are there actual, look, we have this in a lot of workplaces, there are actually, you know, physical and mental health counselors that help us carve out times. There are systems that you have where you can say, I'm going to take my lunch at the gym. There are mental health counselors. Are there any systematic programs that help coaches deal with mental and emotional issues?
It's going to be pretty variable based on, you know, the professional team or the university, high school that they're coaching at. So most universities, you know, have health counseling centers. A lot of the sport coaches aren't going to talk to those folks, but within the athletic department, you know, might have a sports psychologist or a licensed counselor, a nutritionist, a strength coach, for example, too, become a confidant at times for some of those coaches, and can say, hey, let's go ahead and work out. Let's eat a little bit better. Let's figure out how then we can manage your time. Let's how to do it on the road. Let's find places for you to do things to double dip and maximize your time. There's systems in place just like there are for athletes. Is it ubiquitous? Is it something that's just prevalent and people are taking advantage of all the time? No, probably not. But there are those coaches that are just going to say, I'm going to draw the line in the sand. And, you know, from 6 to 7 or from 5 to 6, that's going to be my 1 hour. And then the rest of it, I'm going to be able to get back to work and do my thing.
See, I think part of the problem for coaches, as it is, you know, in a certain number of professions, but in coaching in particular, is you don't ever want to be seen as being weak, right? As the coach of these big, like, you want to be the tough guy, the leader. They put this all on your shoulder. And when you say, like Coach Case just said, I got to step away from this. Like, I need to take some personal time. It almost makes you seem like you're weak. Right. And that's the thing that no one in sports can be. Right. You want your athletes to go out and play hurt. You want the coaches to go out and coach through. You know, we're it's us against the world. It's a war. Do you think that there are more coaches that are enduring, whether it's physical or emotional strain, that just don't say it because of the perception of being seen as weak?
They don't articulate that they've got a problem.
Because they're literally like, look, if I come out and say, look, I'm having a hard time dealing with this. Like, look, everyone on this program knows I love talking about going to therapy. Like, that's my favorite thing. Like, I need all the emotional, physical support that I can humanly possibly get. I have a mental and physical health team. That's what keeps me going. Like, that's how I make it through my day, right? because no one else wants to listen to me. So I gotta find someone. So, do you think that there are a lot of coaches that hide that, whether it's their physical or emotional issues?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Just like, you know, and the comparison would be actually same thing at the University of Denver. We just started a military psychology program to help veterans transition out of the military and provide counseling. And I don't do that, but you know, there are just the same thing. The culture of the military, the culture of some sporting teams are somewhat similar in that it's a lot of, for the most part, it's men and masculine driven. And, you know, right, you're socialized very early on to not talk about your emotions.
Have you noticed, is there a difference between female coaches and male coaches? Do they handle these issues differently?
Overall, yeah, but and then you got to consider some of the structural barriers and features. Like a lot of, you know, some of the women's sports don't quite have the same stress levels.
Sure.
Because the pressure to win and then the masculinity piece, I think, is a key thing. You know, 30, 40 years ago, when you had more women in control of women's sports, you didn't hear about it and you don't see the same problem. But when you put women in situations, too, that are high stress, ultra competitive, aggressive, you know, you start to see the same problems. And you see that at times in the WNBA, you know, because of the same thing, the money, the stress, the aggressive nature of it and keeping your job and, you know, getting worried about getting fired and who's going to stab you in the back.
You know,
those are not great health indicators.
Yeah. What's interesting to me also is that, like, it seems like there's a personality type that almost wants this level of trauma. Like, very few guys can say, you know what, I don't want to deal with it anymore. I think Gruden is one of the few guys that was like, hey, you know what, there's actually a better like, I don't want to go back into coaching. This is better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different than, like, Urban Meyer was out for, like, an hour. And he's like, no, I got to get back. Like, he's like 3 hours out of it. Some of these guys that go through these horribly stressful – Sark had a serious issue, right?
Yeah.
Serious. I mean, he has a serious problem, and I'm not belittling this at all. He has a serious addiction problem. And it's almost like, I got to get back in, versus the rational decision, like, maybe this brings out the worst in me. Like, maybe this is more than I should be dealing with. Is there a personality type, you think, that naturally gravitates towards this?
Wow, that's a great question. In the literature and coaching, I don't know that anybody studied that in relation to stress and coping response styles. In the mainstream literature, yeah, I mean, people are going to be a little bit more have higher trait anxiety, be a little bit more, you know, neurotic. And then if I looked carefully in that literature, there's going to be some correlations there between certain personality styles and just, you know, genetically kind of how you are predispositioned.
Yes.
And then we don't know. A lot of times, you know, if we have a coach too who's bipolar or manic, and there's coaches out there that have that. We don't know that, and you put them in a high stress situation, and that again only contributes to the response, the negative response.
You see, in my therapy sessions, I've learned that I'm never happy with success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use examples at times to talk about work life balance. You know, what does that really mean, and what do you want? Why do you want it? You look at Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. Then I worry about work-life balance. They made that decision a long time ago.
We're here on a Saturday, and I'm getting paid peanuts.
Same.
Go out.
Same.
Yeah, I'm not worried about you. You guys are vying for free trips to Arizona, and I'm sitting here trying to figure that out.
That's fair.
All right, so Brian, if you were advising Coach K now, what would you tell him to do?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, a few things. I know of a coach years ago that actually he had some type of heart condition, heart attack, scare. And after that, because he was the head coach, he implemented, you know, mandatory physicals and exercise for the entire staff.
Oh, I like that. We should do that
here. So, yep. You know, changing the structures, you know, and changing the systems in America, right? We talk about obesity as a big problem. Well, you know, let's get a lot of, you know, everybody's at work. You know, get everybody at the business to have a 30-minute, you know, health and fitness wellness program at work, and we'll make some changes. So, I mean, in Coach K's case, you know, it sounds like he's got some awareness of a problem. He stepped away. You know, I would want to build in a contingency plan that, you know, the assistant coaches know what to do, and I feel confident, and I have to train them and feel comfortable getting them up to speed. You know, and you've got to work on that awareness and that coping of, it's okay to let somebody else do things. You know, none of us are that special or irreplaceable. that we can't have somebody else tell other people how to dribble a ball and how to go recruit people. And obviously Coach K is very successful and has a great system, but, you know, have that continuity and that contingency plan in place, just like any business hopefully would as well before the pieces fall apart.
Yeah. Brian Garrity, the director of the online Masters of Arts in Sports Coaching program at the University of Denver, thank you very much for coming in the classroom.
All right, Keith. Thanks for having me.
So if, by the way, I think we should do a mandatory fitness for the whole group here at the center. We just, every twice a week, we all meet. I wanted to do it, though, like in the movie Secret of My Success, the Michael J. Fox film for the 80s, where they all have to meet on the roof of like a skyscraper, and they all have to jog with the boss around the track as they're briefing him on meetings. I want it totally. If you haven't seen that, go check that out, Secret of My Success, the scene where they all have to work out with the boss. That's how I want this to be. We're all up there wearing like 80s era like warm-up suits.
Sure.
And we all got to go out there and we got to jog on the track together while we're talking about the show. All right. So, you know, if I'm Coach K, I know he won't do it. He should retire. I'm not saying because I can't live without it.
His time is soon. I think what he wants to do right now
is... It made it sound like he's going
to
die, by the way.
No. Did I just, make it sound surgery. Like he was going to die?
You did. Yeah, we were like, his time's coming soon. he's not for long.
Every coach
first to go. Always is.
I think what he wants to do is... he wants to... All right, so he's got a really talented group at Duke. They're probably the most talented team in the country just based on raw talent, right?
They're good, yeah.
And I think Jeff Capel is his guy, and he wants Jeff Capel to be the guy when he can no longer coach. And he's giving Jeff Capel a chance to win some games
He's doing the real coaching waiting thing, yeah. They do that. Sometimes the coaches, they want to set up their guys for success. And maybe that's what's going on. That's I got to tell you, I mean, yes, that transition is going to be brutal. Because you following Coach K is brutal.
It's always bad following a.
You want to be the guy
coach.
That follows the guy that follows the guy. Like you don't want to be. Uh-huh. You want to be the guy after this.
Programs don't recover from coaches leaving.
Nobody
can live up to those expectations.
And beyond that, and this is not. There are some programs. I understand that Duke has become kind of the premier program, but they aren't inherently. There's nothing institutional about Duke that makes it that great. It's not Kentucky. Kentucky has certain institutional things built in at this point that I think Kentucky can go up and down, but it's got a proclivity, and same with North Carolina, for success.
Yeah, Duke is Duke by the name Duke and the name Mike Krzyzewski.
Well, his will has made it Duke, and that's not inherently...
His will and his back.
Yeah, and so I think there's no guarantee that the next Duke coach has the kind of success that he had. No, that's true anywhere, but I think, again, Kentucky and North Carolina, UCLA, Kansas, some of those programs, they will almost it's almost like the bodies float to the top.
Yeah.
Those dead bodies are coming up. Like, they're going to float to the top almost by sheer will and by financial support and all these other things. I don't know. Now, granted, we've said that about Texas football as well. Still the bottom,
still
the ocean
reeling.
Right now.
Manchester United has not been the same since Alex Ferguson.
I don't know that anyone
I know you don't know.
That's not something anyone's thinking about.
What do you think happens to Alabama football once Saban goes?
I think they shut it down.
Yeah.
They just shut the whole thing down. No, it'll be fun. They're going to hire... What are they going to pay the next guy? Like $80 million?
Probably.
Because
they're going to hire like Belichick.
Can you imagine? Could you imagine interviewing for that job? I would like to be I would like to get an interview.
I'd like to be on the committee.
So, Keith, what's your plan for the program?
What's your plan just on your presentation? Do you come in with, like, binders for everybody? Do you have a PowerPoint?
No, I think that's one of those...
Are you just walking in and winging it?
No, I think that's one of those things where you need to, like... Because everyone's coming in with a big presentation.
Right.
You need to come in so overconfident that it's almost like they have to woo you. You have to be like, look...
Wow, that's perfect. That's perfect for you. I think you're the next Alabama football coach.
I think I say, look, I think we all know what I'm capable of. Sell me on the program. Sell me on Alabama football. Because right now I've got a good situation where I am. I'm pretty happy.
It's a nice little power switch you got there.
I'm pretty happy where I am. I don't need to leave. My family's happy. You know, I hate to uproot the family, the kids, new schools. Sell me on Alabama football. Why should I come here? That's how I would address it.
What are you going to do for me today?
Yeah, what are you going to do for me?
Well, like I said, I've got a great situation. You know, I'm sure you got plenty of great candidates. You know, I'm sure any of them would do a fine job. Tell me, you sell me. Convince me why I should be here.
What if you have no leverage? Like,
I just created leverage. I put the Alabama Board of Trustees on the defensive. I just put them in a position to have to sell me.
You only have that leverage if you have a job.
I do. Right now I have a job. So I've just said to them, make it work for me.
All right, it's about that time of the show.
Apparently this is the time of the show. Can we not get two hour tape? Apparently we can only afford 90-minute tape. All right, we got to take a break now. We're going to come back. We can reupholster the walls here. So when we come back, we're going to talk about coaches a little bit more, but we're going to talk about whether or not coach... Oh, there it goes. We're going to talk about whether or not coach... Oh, God. It's coming down. Oh, God. Oh, I'm sorry for the radio listeners. The banner almost knocked me out. All right. So now you're just looking at a blue wall. All right. There you go. That's what happened for you radio listeners. I almost got knocked out by an ESPN 1220 banner. So we'll be talking about whether or not Lane Kiffin should still be on the sidelines of the national title game, or whether Sark should come in and screw that thing up. So we'll be talking about that on the flip side in the classroom on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Communication bringing you back into the classroom on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. For those of you watching the live stream know we have the banner back up, so that's good. We did one thing today.
Good job, guys.
It only took three people. But we got it. I thought that's duct tape up there, isn't there?
No, it's gaff tape. It's a little less sticky.
Can we not get duct tape? Because duct tape would work better.
That's not in our budget. That's above our
budget.
It
would probably actually peel off the... No, I'm sure. Let's get... Because right now we basically have painting tape. Like tape that's made to go on and off. Like the tape that you put when you're doing trim on a house. Mm. Like that tape is not designed to hold things. It's designed to mark things. Like that, you're using tape that we use like for a mark, right? Like stand here.
Yeah, you're right.
That's not tape that's meant to hold things up.
Yeah, but you know what? It's our tape.
That's tape that's meant designed to be like stand on the X.
That tape is somebody's daughter, okay?
Yeah. It's not true. I mean, that's the analogy is somewhere between stupid and offensive. It's like the Spinal Tap line. Fine line between clever and stupid.
That analogy.
So,
I need you to do an entire segment in that accent.
There's a fine line between... We're not paying you to be as stupid as Nigel is. I have a serious question. We going to do Stonehenge tonight? I probably wouldn't feel that way if I weren't so heavily sedated. I'm just doing... What's wrong with being sexy? I'm doing just random Spinal Tap lines.
Could you come on the show next week with your skinny jeans on and say that exact same line?
What's wrong with being sexy?
Just wearing less sleeves than Oliver.
Well, this one goes to 11.
Okay. So, all right, now try to talk about Lane Kiffin in that voice.
Probably be going to haberdashery. What's the problem? The problem is we had a Stonehenge that was in risk of being tramped by a dwarf. That's a great show. That's a great movie. That movie is unbelievable. If I told them once, I told them twice. It's Spinal Tap first, Puppet Show second. I could do that movie. Oh, I haven't seen that movie for like 20 years and I could still do it. So it looks like Alabama's lackluster offense performance against a pretty good Washington defense, by the way. And I watched some – Washington defense, not bad. I understand they're a little undersized compared to Alabama, but so is everyone. I mean, so is like the sumo wrestling squad. So that somewhat lackluster performance, and I guess all of the drama leading up to that of people being late to meetings. By the way, if I got rid of people for being late to meetings, we'd all be fired, including myself. Obviously, I'd have to start with myself. So all of that nonsense led Lane Kiffin Nick Saban, coach of Alabama, to escort Lane Kiffin to his new job at Florida Atlantic University, where he's been named head coach. A couple weeks ago, he was named head coach, or a few weeks ago. And he decided that we would be better off cutting ties, letting Lane go off to his new job at Florida Atlantic, even though we still have the national title game yet to come. We still have this one biggest game of the year. The thing that if you're at Alabama, this is all you really play for, because the SEC title is kind of just like a
It's like a formality.
Yeah, I mean, no one, like, it literally doesn't matter to them anymore. I understand it matters to everyone else, to them. And by the way, I guess it doesn't matter to anyone, because Penn State won the Big Ten Conference Championship, and that didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It just gave them the opportunity to lose to USC.
Yeah.
In a game, by the way, I mean, if USC is going to win, could they please cover? I mean, dear God. That's the worst.
Wasn't that a great game, though?
It's a great game, but they killed me. So, at any rate, so Lane Kiffin, who has been calling plays, and basically has been calling plays, sending plays into their quarterback, their freshman quarterback, who, you know, is used to...
True freshman.
A true freshman quarterback.
18-year-old kid.
Yeah, I mean, this is... You cannot... I don't care how talented or how good he is, you cannot ask someone to do something more difficult than coming in right out of high school and lead the best college football team in the country with the spotlight on you all the entire season, with everyone coming at you full force. Like, there is, and knowing you might be the weak link, because the defense is what it is. The running game, I mean, you are it. They are coming after you. They are begging you to throw the ball. They are literally begging you to make a mistake.
That's right.
And they are challenging you at every point, and they are going to scheme on defense to make it hard for you to make the right decision. All right, and that's hard for a junior or senior in college, much less a first-year student. So they are working this guy, and Lane Kiffin, for whatever he is, I think most people concede he's a good offensive coach. But regardless, he is the guy who has been working with his quarterback the entire year. And with 1 week before the big game, they decide to say, so long, you're going to move on to Florida Atlantic, which, by the way, Bo-Katan, let me tell you what. I'll tell you what. Nothing against the University of Alabama. You know we're big fans. We broadcast from there. Tuscaloosa versus Boca. Boca. I'm off. Gone. You don't have to ask me twice. I'm going to Boca.
You're a big Florida guy, though.
You spend 2 hours in Tuscaloosa, not on a game day, and then 2 hours in Boca, and you tell me. You know what Boca has? A Panera.
Yeah.
I mean,
I can't remember anything that wasn't a gift shop in Tuscaloosa, to tell you the truth.
So, I mean... It's not that complicated.
Yeah.
So he's like, fine. I'll go to Florida Atlantic. We'll get ready for our big rivalry with FIU, and it's fine. We'll go 6-6 every year and play in the Carparts Bowl.
Is there any sport where coaching is more important than football?
I'm trying to think this through.
We just covered this with basketball. I feel like you can switch coaches and not really miss a beat.
You can't.
Especially in the NBA.
I would say this is kind of a technicality. Rivalry.
Fair, yeah. Okay.
You really need to get it.
You really went out there, though.
But you really have to get it exactly right. Like, if you have let me put it this way. This is one of those cases where if you have a real novice coach who lacks true disciplinary knowledge, you could get yourself into real trouble.
Yeah.
The stakes are high. I'm not saying it's a harder thing to coach. I'm saying the stakes are very high.
That stretch, that's a tough comparison.
So that would be the only place I might...
Yeah.
I might see it.
But also, is Alabama that good where they won't miss a beat?
Sailing?
Just because of their talent?
You kind of kill yourself in a sailboat, like on the
ocean?
Do
you have a sailing coach? At some point, you just know how to sail.
No, I think you got to teach the kids how to. And then you tell them where to go.
Right.
You have an instructor, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, you can do it for credit, I believe. So, I think... So now they've got Sarkisian, who was, was a head coach.
Right.
Got
a drunken head coach.
Got in trouble. Showed up overly imbibed in some very important sessions. Didn't really deal with it very well either. And then, got released and hopefully dealt with his problem. And is now coming down to Alabama to be the new offensive coordinator, correct? And so instead of letting Lane Kiffin finish this out, and by the way, you couldn't find two less liked guys than Lane Kiffin and Sarkisian.
Yeah.
These are two guys that, and by the way, I mean, just not for nothing, Sarkisian is not particularly popular with the press either. Neither is Lane Kiffin.
Yeah.
Sarkisian.
Yeah, that's a lot of these guys. Like, Dabo Swinney's not.
Dabo Swinney's gotten himself into a little trouble this year by
Nick
kind of.
Saban's not.
I listened to the Nick Saban press conference on the drive over this morning. the only thing that was worse than listening to the Nick Saban press conference was listening to Tim Tebow's breakdown of the Nick Saban press conference. It was unbelievable. And this is not an affront to Tim Tebow, although we've done that. But there's certainly no – but just – you can't get any worse. I mean, Nick Saban is trying to damage our eardrums by doing this. He's making it hard on us. So – but now some of the coaches, I mean, yes, a lot of them have a bad rep, but there's some that people, they like their good interviews. Like I said, I'll go back to Spurrier. Spurrier was relatively liked by the press. I don't know if Urban Meyer was liked as much when I was in Florida, but I definitely Spurrier was. There's some coaches that I think are relatively, what's his face? Who just got hired at USF, got fired at Texas.
Mac Brown?
No, Mac Brown is about 8 years out now.
I'm sorry. Charlie Strong.
Charlie Strong.
Yeah, that's
Charlie Strong,
what
I think, is relatively liked. The guys that end up in the media afterwards, Charlie Strong, I think, is pretty well liked. I think Chris Peterson at Washington is relatively well liked. He's done a decent job. I'm trying to think of some other coaches.
James Franklin at Penn State.
Yeah, relatively. That was a tough situation. So I think a lot of, you know, there's some coaches that do better and some coaches that do worse. Those two, Sark and Kiffin, happen to not be, I think, favorites of the fans or of particularly of the media. So they bring in Sark, and Sark is now going to be calling the shots from the sidelines. I mean, literally, guy's been there for like a week, and he's going to start calling the shots. Now they know he's got a relationship with Saban.
He's been with the team all year.
Has he?
Yeah, he was their quarterbacks coach, wasn't he? He just got promoted.
Offensive coordinator. So he's been there all year, but he's now going to step in. And he's going to be making the hand signals over there.
Yeah.
Hasn't done this all year, right?
He's the guy now.
What do you think, that's a good idea?
No. I mean, it's just bad timing. I mean, I think Alabama might be so talented. Like,
doesn't matter.
That it might be able to cover this up.
There's two sides of it. And one is the actual... like, does this actually work? Like, if I'm the quarterback, I want to take the calls from the same guy I've taken the calls from all year. I want to look over. Right. There's some nuances.
Especially when you're an 18-year-old quarterback.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some nuances. Like, when he moves to the left, I know what he means is this.
Uh-huh.
Right? And there's just throws that are gonna happen better that way. The other side of it is the optics of this whole situation. There's something about this that I don't particularly like, that you just have a guy that's been there all year, and then with a week to go, you throw him out there. There's part of this that certainly feels like it's more of an ego-driven situation. But regardless, you have to wonder about the general policy of coaches staying on or leaving when they've already got another job. It seems as though, I mean, this is a recurring issue, right? I mean, look what happened to Houston. Their coach got a head coaching job. He's now at where's he, at LSU? No, he's at Texas. New
he's
coach
at Texas.
Herman's at Texas.
Yep.
And Houston got pile driven in their bowl game. Like, they got demolished in their bowl game. And yeah. Houston's a good team. They should have won that game. And it's really, really hard on these programs for these kids when these coaches leave kind of midstream. I really think, and I understand the logistics of why this is hard, but I really wish there was a way of being able to, I don't know, change the calendar so that coaches finish out their string. Like, mm-hmm. let's say I got hired by Harvard tomorrow. Oh. Could happen. Literally could happen. Like, let's say Harvard comes and says, we were starting a new think tank, and you're the guy.
You would be
sell
out
me
the,
on it.
Yes.
I'm going to say, look, I got a good situation here at Marist. Harvard, tell me why I should be at Harvard. Right? And they're like, look, this is high-level stuff, probably issues of national and global security. The world depends on you.
Yeah, you'd be out the door as soon as Harvard called you.
As long as there's a Panera.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Paneras in Panera's Cambridge. I'm sure there's Panera in Cambridge. Very she Panera. So I'm...
fit in with those skinny jeans.
I will. Skinny jeans will fit in very well in Cambridge. Very well. So I would work perfectly in Cambridge. I'd love it there. So Harvard's calling. We're going to double your salary, triple your salary, which still wouldn't amount to much. And they're going to bring me in to run a high-level institute that is of national prominence. I would hope, and they're like, we'd love it if you could hit the ground running, get you here in March. Well, look, I got an award to give to Hannah Storm in May. I can't just walk out. Oh, April 20th. I got an award for Hannah Storm. I got classes to teach. I got a show to produce. I would hope that I could stick around, help that transition, and pull it through. Wouldn't you want me to finish out the string?
I would personally. I don't think you would. No, you know, you would just for the appearances. You would do the Hannah Storm thing.
It's true. It's a high-profile situation. I wouldn't want to
walk
away from
it. You wouldn't do it for anybody except the celebrities you were trying to impress.
It's true. Maybe I just would ditch the classes and just do the award event. That's a good idea.
Exactly.
But, I happen to think in almost every job, you give them a couple weeks, notice, and you finish out the string, and you don't leave them high and dry. I think particularly since we're talking about students that are involved and these athletes that can't leave. Like, these athletes have to play out the string. Even though we saw a couple in the bowl game say, I'm not playing anymore. The athletes have to play out the string. The coaches should stay. I understand why logistically that's very challenging. I think they need to create some kind of mechanism by which the coaches can be encouraged to stay. And I happen to think, I understand why Nick Saban did it. He was probably just all ticked off because he didn't feel like Lane Kiffin was listening to him. I think it's bad optics. I think it's a bad situation. I don't think it's going to cost them much of the game. Although, God willing, I hope this is a close game. I hope they keep it close. I don't like either team, but I hope they keep it close. All right, we're going to have to cut this short. We got one more segment. It's going to be a quick one. We'll be doing grades a week when we get back in the classroom on Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. Dr. Keith Strudler, director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication, bringing us to the finish line of a wonderful episode of The Classroom. Despite being on winter break, that doesn't stop us. Now, of course, your grades of the week.
And now for your grades of the week.
That was the wrong sound.
Do you want the Oliver sound?
Yes. We all want it. Let's do it. The audience wants it.
This is ground control to Major Tom.
It's about time.
You've made the grade
of the week.
Psychomaniac.
It's a little childish and stupid, but then so is college.
I don't do this ABC stuff that everybody else in the world does. You're in either an A or an F. You're not a D or a C or a B. You're either an A or an F.
All right.
That was much better.
Okay.
46-second intro.
There you go.
That's a long intro. All right.
And that's the classroom this week. All right.
So every great NFL skill position group always has a nickname, right? So the Giants yesterday, they have a great defense this year. They nicknamed themselves the NYPD, the New York Pass Defense. So we're going to go through some of the best group names in NFL history. I want you to give them grades.
I was barely listening, by the way. I was watching myself on the live stream. So go ahead. I'm not kidding. All right, go ahead. So what are you doing? You're giving me something?
All right, so the Giants defense named themselves the NYPD yesterday.
Right. Okay.
The New York Pass Defense.
All right.
We're going to go through
seems
all
a little
the...
much, but that's fine.
Yeah. All right. So give that one a grade. We'll start there.
D.
D. All right. We're going to go through
some...
You can't
steal the police department's name. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I'm the Army.
All right. So let's go through some of the best ones from NFL history. Sack Pack, Baltimore Colts.
Sack Pack?
Yeah.
I'd like it more if it was Snack Pack, so I give it a C.
Crunch Bunch, New York Giants.
Ooh, that's not bad. Crunch Bunch, I like a little bit more. It reminds me of like a Nestle Crunch Bar. I give that a B.
Capital Punishment, Washington Redskins.
Capital Punishment. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it gets a little too political. I'll give it a C+.
Grits Blitz, Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, I like that. Grits Blitz. I like it. Where is it from?
Atlanta Falcons.
Atlanta.
Because they do eat grits down there. So that's good. I give that an A-.
Dome Patrol, New Orleans Saints.
That just doesn't work for me. The Dome Patrol doesn't work. I give that a D. That's silly.
Big Blue Wrecking Crew, New York Giants.
Silly. The Giants, they've lost me. There's nothing there. The Big Blue Wrecking Crew. The only one to, look, the only team that gets to use colors are the Purple People Eaters. That's it. That's
Purple Peter, People
Eaters. That's your A. People Eaters. That's the gold standard. That's an A.
Minnesota Vikings.
That's an A. That's a gold standard.
Dirty Birds, Atlanta Falcons.
I don't like that.
Orange Crush.
Denver Orange Crush
Broncos.
I like the old school ones. Orange Crush, because people used to throw oranges at them, so I give that an A.
Yep. Legion of Boom, Seattle Seahawks.
It's not bad. You know why I like that one? It sounds like a wrestling name.
Yeah,
it does. That sounds like
Well, the Legion of Doom is like the anti-Justice League. And
yes,
like
but I like. But the Legion of Boom sounds like wrestlers.
Yeah.
It does. Okay.
Doesn't it like come on out of the Legion of Boom?
The New York Sack Exchange, New York Jets.
I mean, I actually like it.
I think it's clever.
I like that one. I give that an A-. It's pretty good because it's New York. I, by the way, I like the ones where they give themselves a nickname even when they're not good.
Oh, yeah, like the Cardiac Kids, Cleveland Browns.
Yes. I like the ones that are almost ironic. Like, yeah. They're so bad. Like, they're awful. And, like, that's what I like.
Oh, like the Bungles?
Well, those are even great. Like, uh-huh. Like you
or
know.
The Aints for yes. The Bad Saints.
The Beagles. Yep. Like, those are great.
All right. Ready? Electric Company. Buffalo Bills.
See, that's great because I used to watch that TV show, The Electric mm-hmm. Company.
And so, you know why they were The Electric Company?
The Bills?
Yeah.
I don't know. They generate maybe because they generate power off the Niagara Falls.
Because OJ turned up the juice.
See, it would have been better if it wasn't
OJ Simpson.
No, if it was something like how they were generating electricity off of like power generation off Niagara Falls. That would have been cool.
All right. What about band names? We'll go Earth, Wind, and Fire, New York Giants backfield.
I don't like that band. I'll give it a C-.
Steel Curtain, Pittsburgh Steelers.
Steel Curtain, I like. I do like the Steel Curtain because they were so dominating. I'll give it a B+.
Monsters of the Midway, Chicago Bears.
I'm not a big fan. C-.
Greatest Show on Turf, St. Louis Rams.
I like that one a little bit. I'd like that one. I'll give that a B+.
All right.
All right. Oh, that was good. A little rapid fire. All right. That's all we got time for today here on The Clash. I'm 2 hours of delirium and fun. We'll be back next week to do this all over again. I believe Jeff Brawl will be here. Can't guarantee. I'm not his secretary. But let's expect that. Let's pencil that in. Of course, don't forget that on February 6th, 5 o'clock, here at Marist College, the legendary sports broadcaster James Brown will be speaking to me on stage. So go ahead and put that on your calendar and come on up here for that. No charge. It's going to be a great time. I'd like to thank Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal for coming on talking about the Hall of Fame. Thinks that Clemens and Bonds are on their way in, and a good dose of karaoke will probably help them make it there. I'd like to thank Jim Cotter for discussing just that in an esoteric sports topic. I'd like to thank Brian Garrity of the University of Denver to come in and talk a little bit about the stress of coaching and how we might make that a little bit more fun. I'd like to thank, of course, the interns, Matt, just all of you
Matt
guys.
Matt Krzyzewski. Oh, you're not going to say the rest of the names, just Matt?
I mean...
I'm Mike Wallace.
And I'm Doug Cannon.
What up?
I wasn't going to. All right, so join us.
Sorry, we did.
I know. So it was a great episode. And if you want to, there'll be a podcast of this up online by Monday. I'll try to get it up by Sunday. It's all dependent on the interns. And go ahead and watch the live stream. Go check out our Twitter feed, whatever it is. You can watch the live stream. So that's all today from Dr. Keith Strother, director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication, Fox 12 2097.3 ESPN. Class is dismissed.